You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Wednesday. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Tony East, who has not lost six basketball games in a row. I cover the Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. On the other line, Wisconsin Herd aficionado, Wisconsin resident, Big Bucks guy, knows everything for me, Ty Windzik. Ty, did I say your last name right?
Not quite. Windish, but it's all good. You went with the more like Slavic.
I did.
Pronunciation. That was. I mean, I get why. You know, you had Bojan Bogdanovic on the team last year. I get where you're coming from, but it's a German name, so. It's,
I think you might be the first person this season that I forgot to ask before how to pronounce their name.
It's all good. That's definitely been there when I hosted my Time Out with Ty podcast, where I interviewed a new person every episode. I pretty much got at least half the names wrong, so totally good. I've been on the other end way more than I've been on this end.
At least I'll get Giannis's last name right today.
Will you?
Antetokounmpo. Unless I have to do like the real spelling version.
So I do. I go back and forth.
Not many people know that it's spelled wrong normally.
Yeah. It got badly translated. I think when he went to Greece from I think the last name when his parents went from Nigeria to Greece went from Adetokounmpo to Antetokounmpo. So I kind of go back and forth. I don't know if there's a right way per se.
Well, speaking of Giannis, so the Bucks are playing right now. As me and Ty are talking, I believe we're both watching them as Chris Middleton drives to the basket and misses, but gets fouled in the lane. Are playing without Giannis. He had the birth of his son Liam, I believe is his name today, which is very exciting for him. And so he's out, but it is to be determined if he will play on Wednesday. Correct. But the problem with us doing this now is we are a little ahead of that, and we won't know for sure. But still, we can talk about it either way.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm not sure if we'll have any more clarification on Wednesday than we do tonight as we record this. I mean, I think it's anything like sort of more personal issues like this. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a feeling out process, seeing how everything is going. It seems like everything is going well so far. We certainly haven't heard anything to the contrary. Giannis had his very happy post about his new son, his firstborn, Liam Charles Adetokounmpo. Charles being Giannis's late father's name, which is very, very cool. But we won't know either way. You know, of course, you always want Giannis to play. Everyone wants to see Giannis. I've already heard from some other people asking me about this, you know, because they know someone who wants to go to the game. Someone's little nephew, I think, really wants to go and is really hoping Giannis plays because they're really excited to see Giannis. So you hope he plays. Obviously, it's, you know, more fun for me when Giannis plays. But of course, you kind of understand the first-time father, if he needs a little bit of time before the All-Star break, which happens to be in Chicago, very close to Milwaukee this year, you kind of have to understand that. So
right.
You kind of see both sides, really.
You know, there's a chance the Pacers go through this home stretch and play the Mavs without Luka, the Pelicans without Zion, the Nets without Kyrie, and the Bucks without Giannis, which would be just an absurd run of luck. And they might lose every single one of those games. So.
Well, I think it almost evens out because I think the Bucks earlier had the Mavs without Luka and they lost that one. They missed.
Okay, good. That makes me feel better.
Yeah, the Mavs can still win pretty much any game. And and obviously the Pacers twice without Oladipo. I think one of those was in that around that Luka game too. So we've kind of been on the other end of one of those fortunate runs. It feels like there's been a lot of injuries, maybe not as serious. I mean, there's a lot of guys just sitting out, but there's been a lot of little nagging injuries on a lot of key guys this year, which stinks. Yeah. You like to see the best guys go against each other.
It is unfortunate. The Pacers win against Toronto, no Siakam. They beat the Celtics without Marcus Smart. The Lakers didn't have Anthony Davis. Could go all day talking about this stuff. But we're here to talk Pacers Bucks because that's what's happening tonight. Last game for both teams before the All-Star break, as Ty incorrectly got on his podcast the other day.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that one up.
Sorry, Ty.
I felt so stupid. Well, what's funny is that the only reason I saw it, I was looking at like a linked calendar. So I have the Bucks schedule like populate my calendar apps. So I'm looking in it and I'm like, I think something's broken because I see the first game of the so-called Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back. And I'm like, why is the Pistons game not showing up on Thursday? So I'm like investigating. I'm getting ready to re-download the calendar. And then I go out to month view and see that it's on next Thursday and it all clicks. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is just colossally stupid by me.
big game for both teams. I guess not so big for the Bucks. They're on a roll. Although if Giannis doesn't play, it'll be interesting to see how they can look without him. They still have all-star Chris Middleton, over 20 points a game, 50, 40, 90 guy. So being the Bucks without Giannis, no easy task, as the Kings are learning right now. They're only up by, it looks like, 5 with a couple minutes to go in the third quarter. But we'll start with Giannis because, he's the place to start with the Bucks. MVP frontrunner by a mile, 30, 13 and a half, and 6 guy right now. How many games would he have to miss to not win MVP for you? Like 20, right? Over 20, probably.
Yeah, it'd probably be at least 20 games. It's funny, in our Euro group Discord that we have to kind of go with the Eurostep podcast, we talk a lot, and a lot of the Bucks people in there, the Bucks fans, are upset because it seems like there's like a new MVP case being made for someone else completely random every 2 weeks or so, just to kind of spice things up, because it does feel like Giannis has pretty much run away with this thing. Yeah.
It's over.
So right now it's like Dame, who I think the Blazers are missing the playoffs if the season ends today. But
yep.
Dame has been totally incredible. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Dame Lillard, but you look at what Giannis does per minute, you look at what Giannis does per game, even in like less than 31 minutes, it's completely crazy. I mean, the guy has been bonkers. The Bucks are the best team in the league by, it feels like, a country mile, even though they are losing right now to the Kings. We'll see how this one ends. I like the Bucks' chances, but he's just so good. And yeah, I would think, I don't want to think about the reality where that is even up for debate. So thank you for putting that troubling image in my head. But no, I think
it's
certainly
not a debate.
I don't think it's a true debate. If everyone stays healthy, I'm on course right now. I don't think there's anyone even close, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. So this is a very generally honest question, but he's been better than last year, which is unbelievably hard to imagine, just given that he was the MVP last year and averaged ridiculous stats. And some of that is passing, and some of that is he has at least a threat to shoot, even though the percentage isn't great. What else, and you can even use those two things, what all is he doing that's leaped him from amazing to like one of the best seasons ever?
Well, people, of course, I think the shooting comes up first, because that's for a few years now. The whole thing with Giannis, right, has been if he gets that jump shot. That's been like that's been tagged on to every single other Giannis conversation. You know, if he can knock down those jumpers, if he can hit those threes, etc. The threes are kind of like coming along. It's like start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. As I'm sure you're well aware, a lot of people listening are probably well aware. You know, any sort of development in the NBA, it's almost never linear. You know, it kind of is that sort of jagged process. You don't just get 1% better every day. One day it feels like you're just all the way there. Then maybe you have a tough week. That's been Giannis's 3-point shot. Giannis's mid-range shots have been a lot more interesting and a lot more effective. Both like pulling up in some space, you know, when defenders just drop all the way back, or he's been busting out a lot of post fadeaways recently, which are just devastating when you consider how tall and, I mean, so to speak, freakish Giannis is athletically. And he's really been nailing those at a pretty high rate. I don't want to say automatic. I doubt he's there yet. And I don't have the number in front of me, unfortunately. I don't know if there's a clean number to talk about exactly what the shots I'm looking at. But they've become a lot more effective, and that's good. That opens up a lot of room for him. But the biggest thing, I think, that kind of goes with that is, like, last year, like, if you go back and watch the Eastern Conference Finals, which I haven't yet done, I might do. I'm hopefully not, though, because I don't want to go through that again. But the game hadn't slowed down all the way for Giannis yet. When he was facing defenses primed to stop him far too often, and I think this is partially on Giannis, partially on Mike Budenholzer and the Bucks coaching staff, which did not do a good job in the late playoff rounds, too much of just Giannis charging into defenses, set defenses. And he'll still score some of the time because he is that damn good. He is Giannis. I mean, he's unbelievably good. It's the Bucks have not seen a guy like this since Kareem left, for sure. But too often, it's a turnover. It's just a missed shot. It's a block. It's whatever. An offensive foul. Those happened all the time. And this year, you can kind of see, in conjunction with more Bucks doing other stuff. You mentioned Chris Middleton, the All-Star, two-time All-Star now. Earlier, he's been doing a lot more offensively. I think he's kind of been filling a void left by Malcolm Brogdon. I'm sure we'll get to that whole thing at some point. But Giannis,
you could go all day on that one.
I sure could. Trust me. I have had to, unfortunately. But Giannis is sort of seeing the game more now. I think he'll slow up when he's attacking and find a cutter or find an open shooter. He'll never be LeBron in passing. I don't think anyone will be outside of, like, you know, those, you know, whatever, five guys who saw the game like LeBron did. But he's getting to more of those, like, hit a shooter across without really looking passes and starting to hit the shooting pockets more. hit cutters more, find Chris more when he's got an advantage. So really he's using that space. Usually space is used to talk about shooters. Giannis is using his gravity and his space in the rim to find guys outside, and it's really made him a lot more dangerous, a lot harder to guard this year.
Yeah, without Thad Young, the Pacers have no one to put on him. I mean, no one has a guy to put on him. I mean, but the gist is there. He said last year Thad was one of the best defenders of him, but that is something that worries me the most. And even right now, watching the Bucks, they've had two Bledsoe drives kick out to Pat Connaughton triples. Obviously, Bledsoe's not Giannis, but the Pacers recently have gone through this stretch where they're losing a bunch of games, and some of that is they're having a ton of trouble keeping ball handlers in front of them, and they just get in the paint, kicking out for a three, and then the team makes it, or at least has a good look. And if Giannis is able to do that, I mean, I don't know what the Pacers are going to do, because surely their game plan is going to be try to slow him down. But if Middleton's hitting the percentage he is, and Connaughton can shoot, and Bledsoe's an okay shooter and catch and shoots, and Brook Lopez's percentages are down, but I'd never want to be the team that leads him open. And Pacers people know Wesley Matthews. I could go through the whole roster if I wanted. I didn't even get to George Hill yet. Like, I don't know how they're going to defend this team. I mean, no one can defend Giannis, but there has to be some sort of plan for defensive rotations that just had to be absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the Raptors, Kawhi gets all the credit for stopping him, but it was a team effort. I think that's the thing I look at when I'm looking at how can a team stop Giannis. You know, you need two guys most of the time. The Sixers really try and do it with one, just Joel Embiid. That did not work at all their last game. It worked the Christmas matchup, but a lot of people overlooked. Bledsoe missed that game, and Giannis was, I think, pretty fairly obviously limited with back soreness. He ended up sitting out a couple games after that. This last time, it did not work at all for Joel Embiid, who this time, he was banged up, so we've really yet to see them both fully healthy. But most of the time, you need two guys. You need that sort of wing player, the Thad Young kind of guy on the perimeter, and then he's going to need some help. You know, he's going to need a center back there. So if the other Bucks, the other four Bucks, are hitting threes,
I forgot Kyle Korver, who just took a three.
Kyle Korver and probably Marvin Williams by the Pacers game, who the Bucks just signed. Unfortunately, my guy Dragan Bender gets released to accommodate that move, but the upside of Marv is tremendous. I'm very excited.
And he's not in another contender, which is a huge deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that he can finally get that ring for obvious reasons. But it's clearly like a very difficult proposition to stop the Bucks and Giannis. If you factor you probably need two guys most of the time, and the Bucks have a lot of shooters, if you do the math, usually someone is open. So Giannis seeing the floor better makes it really hard to really shut down their offense. But what's been surprising me about the matchup between these two teams, and obviously no Oladipo in either game, Pacers have yet to score 90 points against the Bucks this season. That is, I mean, the Bucks have the best defense in the league, but that's remarkable to me for a Pacers team that I feel like has been pretty good offensively. And
not recently.
Not recently, no. So, like, why do you think the Pacers have struggled to score so much against Milwaukee? And I know Brogdon didn't play in one of those games either, but even though when he did play, they only get up to 89, which, honestly, I was expecting.
They haven't hit 90 in either game.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's crazy.
So Lopez is obviously incredible on defense, and a lot of what they do to score is through Sabonis. So having a center like Lopez, who, and obviously he drops pretty low, but is able to handle drop coverage as well as he does, contain two guys at once, is huge, because now all of a sudden they don't have that one fulcrum creator that they can just run everything through. Amazing play by the Bucks right now to get a Wesley Matthews three. They don't have that fulcrum to just run everything through and get easy points. And obviously Giannis can shut down literally whatever player he chooses on a given night, which TJ Warren's had that. Sabonis has it for a few stretches. Like, they're having a lot of trouble. So Sabonis in their November game, I believe, when they scored 83, was 3 for 13. Horrible game. Aaron Holiday, so that was the game Brogdon didn't play. Aaron Holiday was a chucker that game as well. And they just can't generate anything around with Lopez around. And they were actually really banged up. If you'll recall, Naz Mitrulong was in the rotation back then. TJ McConnell was hurt as well. Those were the two-way Naz Mitrulong. That's a name you don't hear very often. So they had some bang-ups there. Still, though, Sabonis' struggles, I think, are the biggest reason, right? He is so much of what they do on offense between dribble handoffs, his screening, his whatever. And then in the second game, he was a little better, much better, actually. But still, they were missing some guys. Jeremy Lamb was out that time, and it's just really hard against the Bucks, right? They concede. They're willing to let you shoot the shots the Pacers want to take, and over the course of an entire game, eventually, like, you're just going to be losing to the Bucks and have to take the shots they want you to take, or excuse me, they don't want you to take, which are The corner threes, they're ready for those. They give a bunch of above the break threes, if I recall correctly. But their just scheme is so perfect to shut down the way the Pacers play. And really, they have had no answer so far.
Yeah, and I think it really helps that the Pacers, even though they're pretty malleable big guys, the fact that the Pacers like to start two big guys, I think really plays into the Bucks' hands, because like the Kings in this game were really making life uncomfortable for Brook Lopez earlier by putting Harrison Barnes at center and trying to make Brook go out there and run and keep up with him, which he really just won't even try to do. I mean, he'll just kind of half-heartedly contest from the very top of the key. Brook Lopez is not the kind of, like, the Bucks don't want him chasing around guys on the perimeter. It's just not what they do defensively. So the Pacers, although, like I said, I mean, Sabonis and Turner can both shoot a little bit, I think just the fact that they play two center-ish guys really makes life easier for the Bucks defensively. And it's going to be tough. I mean, now that Indiana is still kind of working on reintroducing Oladipo to everything else, I know Malcolm Brogdon's not been the hottest of late. I don't know if he's kind of still sort of banged up, which happens.
Yes.
Yeah, of late, being a little generous there. A month. So that's going to be tough. I mean, this game on Monday night, tonight as we're talking, against the Nets was a tough one for sure, with Dinwiddie hitting that game winner. I don't know. It's just like this Pacers team just started off so hot, and it felt like everything was just going together perfectly. Do you think Oladipo coming back is the issue here? It seems to me like it started a little bit before he made his return, right? Or how's my timeline on that? I'm just generally curious.
No, they went on a road trip right before he came back, and they won in Denver and Phoenix and Golden State, and then played Portland pretty well on Dame's at the beginning of Dame's ridiculous can't beat the Blazers thing, and that was the passing of Kobe was that day, so he. Was mega inspired. I think he had 50. So they played pretty well on that road trip. And then they came back and they had all this time off, and Vic came back and then he hit the ridiculous clutch three against the Bulls. And it was like rosy Pacerland. And then, I mean, they weren't playing poorly before he came back. I mean, they weren't playing like amazing, but I would never have said like poor. But then, yeah, Vic coming back, right? At first he came off the bench, so their rotation was so out of whack. They were doing two new things at once. They were integrating a guy on a minutes limit and playing with lineups he's not going to play with most of the time. So it was really awkward. So they said, okay, this is dumb. So they moved into the starting lineup, and now they're learning this whole new rotation and all this stuff. But TJ Warren was out with a concussion, so it was still not all the way. And they've been in all these games, right? They were up 10 in Toronto with 2.5 minutes to go, and they were up on the Nets tonight late, and they were up on the Mavs late in the game and the Pelicans late in the game. They just have not been able to close at all, which obviously if you're a fan – feels worse. And they've played bad. I don't want to say like, oh, they played well and just can't close, but I mean, they've been in all these games. They're clearly getting a little better with Vic in the rotation each and every night, but it has not been a pretty process so far, and they still have some work to do to figure out how to use everybody. And especially with, you know, I have this long running theory on NBA teams. The Kings are usually the team I used to explain it, where good point guard play is the most important, or at least good lead ball handler play is the most important thing to go from tier to tier to tier. And as Brogdon has started this slump, their lead ball handler play has dropped, and suddenly their win rate has dropped substantially. So getting him back in the groove and having Vic not shoot whatever 20% every game will help them a ton.
Yeah, so, and just having Vic be more of a lead ball handler, I think,
right,
could really help with that too. I totally buy that theory, by the way. I think there was, so it felt like the Sixers were on pace to literally go 6-76, the worst process here. And I'm pretty sure, and I might be getting this wrong, but I'm pretty sure Ish Smith completely changed their season. Like going from unimaginably awful at point guard. Like, I don't even remember. I think like Tony Roten was it, their only point guard, to Ish Smith starting games made like a noticeable difference and got them on track to not respectable, but I guess a more respectable record. So yeah, there's absolutely levels. Like, you need that guy to just initiate. It doesn't have to be a pure point guard, of course, with the way the NBA works now, but like somebody to initiate.
Giannis
like
is the Bucks lead ball handler.
A lot of the time, yeah. They really just have like three of them. It's so fun to watch that team on offense. The fact that it's not just the Giannis show, and obviously he's so pivotal in everything they do, but the way he works without being on ball, honestly on both ends, is spectacular. Because you watch, they don't usually use Giannis to guard the team's best perimeter player. They might put him on the least threatening guy, and they let him roam. And that, I think, is really what gives the Bucks defense the extra teeth. I mean, when you get Brook Lopez on one side of you and Giannis on the other side of you, if you're in the paint, good luck doing anything. Like, scoring, don't even think about it. Even passing out is difficult. It's just so much big dudes all over. And then when Brook sits, you get Robin Lopez instead, which really is not any better for the offense.
As you say that, IU legend Yogi Ferrell limps up a floater over Brook Lopez instead of taking it at him.
You got to. There's just, there's, I think they're like the top three, and at least they were. I haven't looked in a while, but like the field goal percentage allowed around the rim, it's like Brook Lopez, Giannis, Robin Lopez. Like they really just do not let you score inside. So most, if not all the games they've lost, you just have to go crazy from three. So I think that'll be something if the Pacers are going to win this one. In the first two games, I think, I know the most recent one, 12 for 40 in the December game. So that's
30% in the other one.
So yeah, it's just
a little better, but still
it's
bad.
A better percentage, but you only made 12 of them. So that's not, not scoring enough compared to what the Bucks do. So really, like, you have to guard the Bucks from three pretty well and get a little lucky. There's always a little luck in 3-point shooting and variance and stuff, but you have to get up threes and make them. It's just, if you can't score, and the Bucks just won't let you score inside. That's just, they'll live with the threes. That's whatever. They're not going to change how they defend that much most of the time. Sometimes they'll go Giannis at the five. That's been a killer lineup for them, obviously, depending if he plays. But they can do that. But, you know, a lot of the times against a typical team, they'll just say, keep on shooting. Good luck making them. We'll adjust a little bit, but you need to make a lot to beat them. So, like, I'm looking at this last box score. The only Piston to make more than two was Doug McDermott. Totally his thing. That makes sense. But only two guys even made two, and that was Sabonis and Turner, which that also makes a lot of sense against the Bucks. I'm sure they just had Brook Lopez dropped and they pulled. But, I mean, Sabonis only attempts two. Turner makes two of five. I mean, you really just – you got to take and make open threes to beat this Bucks team. It's really, like, the only way anyone's done it this year. 12 makes is probably not getting it
done. We ran through that on our – I remember the Nuggets, the most recent loss for the Bucks, hit a ridiculous amount of threes, and – I think John Schumann of NBA.com was like, hey, look at the last four teams that have beat the Bucks. I felt like the stupid high, like 19 threes a game number of threes in those wins or something.
Yeah, and they're shooting like 40-some percent from three. Like, it's absolutely nuts. I mean, the Spurs, when they beat the Bucks, LaMarcus Aldridge was chucking them and making a ton. the Grizzlies, I think they lost that game, but Jaren Jackson Jr. made it interesting by literally scoring like 40 points on the strength of like eight made threes or something crazy like that. I mean, and the Spurs made a ton. Not the Spurs, excuse me, the Mavs, when they beat the Bucks, made a ton even without Luka. So that's the formula. And I wonder if this Pacers team is built to get enough threes up to win that way. I'm not sure if they're – I don't know. You know better than me. How often does this team shoot a lot of threes?
They're last in the league in three-point attempts per game. Yes, by a healthy amount too. Like, it's them and the Spurs and then a gap and then the next team.
That's kind of a typical McMillan thing, isn't it?
It is a typical McMillan thing, which is – frustrating given now that, you know, McDermott can shoot, Justin Holiday can shoot, Miles can shoot, that it is not something to focus on. Like, for all the things McMillan is good at, we see time and time again, not time and time again, that's aggressive, but we see often enough, like, Bojan goes to the Jazz and they just shift his shot profile ever so slightly, and all of a sudden he's like a 22 point a game scorer. Like, that's all they did. He's playing exactly the same besides that. So it's a little frustrating, but he gets the most out of guys pretty much everywhere else outside of the whole three-point shooting thing. That's why I thought Brogdon could be a nice fit. You know, he could be that ancillary hit threes at the end of possessions guy. That has not happened. Another thing from these last two games, Pacers-Bucks. Guess how many total free throw attempts the Pacers have in two games against the Bucks?
I saw one of the games was like less than 10, so I'm going to go...
Both are less than 10.
Wow.
The answer is 14. Total free throw attempts in two games. Yes, that is poor. They are also last in free throw attempts per game this season. At one point, it was one of the five lowest seasons since 2000.
Oh, goodness.
Yes, they do not like to get up the efficient area shots.
So that's tough. I wanted you to know offhand, and it would be probably too hard to look up. Are they not attacking the rim? Are they just like shooting pull-up twos most of the time?
The guys who shoot around the rim would be like TJ Warren, who's contact averse McGee, and he makes like every layup he takes, so it doesn't matter. And Sabonis, who is so strong and just bounces off of dudes that it doesn't look like he got fouled. So they just don't so Giannis does the same thing, right? He like plows through a dude and it doesn't look like he got fouled, even though he totally did. Stuff like that. And a lot of their other guys are like Jeremy Lamb will pull it from the elbow instead of going to the rim, and Turner doesn't shoot the basket very much, stuff like that. So really bad at getting to the line this year. So they've been finding other ways to be efficient. Like their offensive or their true shooting percentage is like league average, or offensive rating is close to league average, just not in the normal ways.
So I think that explains a lot of their troubles against the Bucks. I mean, just the last few things we've talked about. I mean,
yep.
pretty much the three-point shooting alone, trying to do stuff by the rim, especially if you're contact averse and you're not going to pick up a foul on Brook Lopez, makes it real. I mean, you gotta try and make him foul you. And he gets called for a lot of ticky-tacky stuff, but I think the contact averse guys just generally don't get a good of a whistle, even if it's dicey, just because of their histories. And then on the other end, not having that Giannis stopping forward. That's just like, they have like the worst possible recipe for a good team, for like an actual NBA team to try and stop the Bucks. Like, it's like the worst possible combo of a team that could possibly be 31-23, which is good. I mean, it's a good team.
The new circling Pacers fandom thing about this losing streak as well. At least they'll be the sixth seed and I have to play the Bucks till the conference finals. It's like, well, you gotta get there. I understand. Yeah, I mean, I understand the sentiment. Like, I kind of agree with it because they're going to obviously be peaking later, but it's very funny that's how the shift is. So I want to talk more about the Bucks. I feel like we're talking a lot about the Pacers. Not that that's a bad. Chris Middleton, the unbeknownst to anyone 50-40-90 guy this year, incredible basketball player. Can he be – so I'm watching him right now. Oh, maybe this will be perfect timing. Oh, he missed the pull-up three. Can he be the number one guy if Giannis doesn't play? I know he's like absolutely ridiculous as a sidekick kind of guy, an amazing player this year, probably a top 15 guy this year. But can he be the number one Giannis is out, I'm leading the team guy?
Well, he put up 51 last time Giannis was out
against
the Wizards. So I think that's a pretty good record for Chris. And actually, I think I'm like a minute ahead of you on the game. He just made nice assist pass.
I'm at 4:23 on the clock.
I'm at 3-something. He makes a nice assist to Dante DiVincenzo for a three coming up. I think
great ragu. You got to write that down.
Yeah. Big ragu.
Oh, my gosh. I got it wrong again. You're right.
Great ragu is even better. It makes it sound like an urban legend. I think Chris definitely is. I don't have it up, unfortunately, but I've seen it like floated through Bucks Twitter a few times. His per-minute numbers with Giannis on are like very, very good. Like, he's like mid-20s per 36, I think, or maybe a little higher. His per 36 numbers are awesome. He just doesn't play like everyone on the Bucks. But like, when Giannis is out, he's like mid to low, or maybe like just solid middle 30s per 36 in the minutes without Giannis. Like, he has absolutely torched other teams. Tonight he's got 25 points on 19 shots.
Wow, he's at 5 dimes per 36 this year. Man, I didn't know.
Yes,
that.
Like, actually I should look. He was on triple double watch earlier. Let's see. This is compelling radio as I pull up the box score for the
That's
game.
Okay. That happens all the time.
He's got 25 points, 9 boards, and 7 dimes tonight in 31 minutes without Giannis. So yeah, wow. He definitely is capable definitely can, of being yeah. that guy. And what's interesting is I think, and I don't even mean to do this to trash Brogdon, although he's not playing well right now. I think a lot of the reasons that I was hesitant in saying it was horrible for the Bucks to not pay him have kind of come to fruition. I mean, he's been a guy who's had those injury troubles. I didn't think he would be a 50-40-90 guy as a first option. He honestly scores better than I thought he would until this recent stretch. He started off the year incredibly hot, though. But there was sort of a Ewing theory thing I thought could happen from taking those touches and those creation opportunities, because Brogdon was called on as like a part-time creator. I mean, he wanted to be a point guard. The Bucks wanted Bledsoe to do that, whatever, blah, blah, blah. That'll be reiterated ad nauseum, especially because they're on kind of sort of rival teams now. But I thought, you know, let's get whoever it ends up being. It ended up being Wes Matthews, who's not going to create anything, really. He's, you know, a spot-up guy.
He can take one dribble to the right and take a step back three.
Exactly. That's his step. That's his creating offense, basically. Or sometimes he'll like try to post somebody up, and I'm almost like, Wes, what do you – whatever. I mean, if you want to do it once in a blue moon, sure. But give those opportunities to Chris Middleton and make Chris Middleton create. Use Chris Middleton in the Chris and Giannis pick and roll, which is a play I've been crying for from the middle of last year. And they've actually done it. Like, Rohan and I joke, my co-host on the podcast, that Bud must listen to the pod, because – now, like, when the Bucks are in like a crunch time situation, they will just go to that Chris Giannis pick and roll. Like, they will let Chris create and be that guy that everybody said they needed. It turns out he was here the whole time, and he has certainly stepped up even better than I expected. And I don't think he wasn't good enough before. I just think the combo of all the other guys on the team kind of establishing how they play under Bud. You know, Bud typically likes the ball movement, you know, motion offense, more selfless stuff. There was kind of that clashing early on with Chris wanted to shoot more outside of that, and Bud was like, oh, maybe you can do a little. Now I think it's shifted more to everyone realizing Chris is that guy. This guy is already on the Bucks. They don't need Kyrie Irving or whoever. Like, this guy can do it. Let's just give him more opportunities. And he has absolutely shined this year with those opportunities. It's been so exciting and rewarding to watch. I mean, even after the Wizards game, which was like 2 weeks ago, Chris was like, oh, I'm not usually the guy who wants to shoot every time. You know, I'm a team guy, whatever. And that's a great attitude. I think it's really important to their long-term, you know, potential and how well they get along as a team, which is one of my favorite storylines of the year. But part of me is always like, Chris, you should shoot still a little bit more. Like, you're good enough. Take those shots. But I think it's promising that we're seeing when the Bucks need him to do so, he's not hesitating to do that.
It'd be very tempting to make him all NBA at the end of the year.
We are already talking in the Discord group. I'm going to start pushing that on the podcast soon.
I was trying to think what you were talking like. Okay, top six forwards this year. He's close, man.
I think he's got to be in there. He's been way better than Paul George.
The back end of it. I was going to say you got the PG too. Yeah, him and PG are pushing the back end of that.
He has been remarkable. Like, noticeably better than Paul George this year. He's on the best team in the league. His per 36 minutes numbers are wild. I mean, people react to this so wildly, and then you ask them to make the list of, like, show me all the forwards who are better.
Do you know? Do you happen to know Ty the city that Paul George plays in?
I am well aware of the city.
Okay, ask that question.
I am very well aware. Well, you know what bothers me about the Paul George Chris Middleton thing before more than anything else is the big NBA duos piece that everybody felt compelled to write this offseason, the summer of big twos or whatever. Nobody put Giannis and Chris on any of their big twos. And it really frustrated me, man. Like, the Nuggets got Jokic and Jamal Murray. And I like Jokic, and Jamal Murray's fine, but, like, Giannis is better than Jokic. Chris is better than Jamal Murray. Like, just because you don't find them exciting doesn't mean you just can't miss them. He is. Like, the Bucks guys, it's so weird. It's so frustrating, man. Like, of course, I mean, Indiana – not exactly a glamour market people get enthused about either. So I'm sure you can relate, but some of this stuff does definitely frustrate me sometimes. And I was just happy to see around All-Star, most people had Chris Middleton as just an absolute lock, at least as a reserve. Honestly, he had a pretty good starting case, but at least he was a solid locked-in reserve. That did make me happy.
Right. Yeah, it was obvious to me. And he got drafted pretty high in the draft too. I do want to touch on the national media thing because that happens a lot. And yes, you're correct in Pacers fandom. It's just stupid to me because here's what happens. People get all up in arms that no one writes about the Pacers. No one talks about the Pacers. And then they do. And they do a terrible job because they never watch the team. And everyone's like, clearly you never watch the team. I'm like, why do you want them to talk about the team so bad when they're just going to do horrible? Who cares? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I think then the reason I would like the smaller markets to get more real recognition, and by real recognition, I don't mean what is the Bucks one loss in the last 3 weeks say about Giannis leaving in 18 months?
That is annoying.
Yes. Oh, it's so annoying. And I'm honestly, I'm happy for you guys. I haven't seen much about Depot's free agency, which is
his what? Few, huh? His,
exactly. What? because there's like things like, because then you'll see later arguments like if Giannis was in X market, maybe he would get coverage and get this media or whatever. And it's suddenly it's the Bucks' fault or his fault. He's not covered more and this team isn't covered more and Chris Middleton and whatever. And it's just so frustrating because it's like the Bucks are doing all the right things to get coverage. There's no drama. They don't go out and try to recruit people. Like, they just go out and play basketball and kick everybody's butts, so to speak. I don't know what the swearing policy is like on this podcast, but that's all they do. And they like do fake WWE fights and they have a lot of fun. They're fun to watch. And it's just like,
love the fake WWE.
Oh, it's so much fun. People are telling me it's corny. It's whatever. I don't care if it's corny. Like, grow up. Don't think you're too cool for fun. It's fun. Like, have fun, watch basketball, have fun, enjoy fake WWE. That's my mantra this season. And honestly, it's been enjoyable.
Yeah, the Bucks aren't really enjoyable. I'll give you that. If they had, like, really good TV basketball analysts like the NFL does, then, yeah, I would be mad that the Pacers weren't being covered, but they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get your point, though, of, like, if the coverage is going to be, look how much fun Giannis had talking to Steph Curry after the game. Yeah, Steph gave him a jersey. If that's all you get, then, yeah, I guess just don't. It's better to not say anything at all.
Exactly. Yeah, like, Rob Mahoney came here for The Ringer, wrote a sweet piece because he came here.
Yes, that piece rocked.
It was so good. But then, yeah, the jump will come on and say they're nothings about whoever, or someone will say Sabonis is the worst All-Star.
Oh, that sucked. I was looking
at Sabonis. We're not naming names. We're not going to talk about that. He is an employee of the Locked On Podcast Network. And to be fair, in his defense of it on his show, he actually had some pretty good points. But the tweet felt super, super clicky, grabby. Anyway,
turnovers per game, given his usage, is nuts.
Yeah. Yes, you are absolutely right. I want to go back to the game that's going to happen tonight. Outside of 3-point shooting, what matchups can the Pacers exploit to score more than 89 points?
It's really hard to get on the 3-point shooting, man. Because Giannis or not, you know you're going to get
probably
48 minutes.
Say Giannis and Chris are out. How many minutes a game is that? Like 4, 5?
Wait, what do you mean?
Is there any portion of a game where Giannis and Chris are both out of the game?
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh yeah, Bud loves junk lineups.
Good, no good. Okay, so the Pacers bench does usually kick the other team's ass. Can that be a thing that happens? Can TJ McConnell kill another team?
Oh, for sure. That's a thing that always happens to the Bucks. Not always. The Bucks have a really good bench, and somebody wrote about.
Yes, they do.
I think Michael Pena maybe wrote about how good their bench is, and it is very good usually. But right now, George Hill is out. I don't think he's going to be back before the All-Star break. So he'll probably miss this game too. He's got I think it's a hamstring thing. So that stinks. I mean, the NBA's leading 3-point shooter, a big anchor on that bench unit. So Bud being Bud still likes these bench lineups for some reason. So you'll get like Dante DiVincenzo, Pat Connaughton. Lately, he's been mixing in Eric Bledsoe, which thank God, because they really needed that shooting help. So it's like Bledsoe, Dante, Connaughton, maybe Korver, and like Ersan. Ersan at the 5 for absolutely no reason. Or maybe Robin Lopez, like take out Pat and Ersan, whatever. Like a mix of like 4. Well, Dante I think is good and getting there. He's off and on, but he's not a reliable shot creator just yet. Bledsoe is, and that's nice. But then the other guys are like, why the hell does Pat Connaughton play 18 minutes per game? Just a dunk, I guess.
I love Pat. Really, come on.
I love Pat too, but Pat does frustrating stuff. So those lineups are definitely ones where you have to take advantage. Hope that Bledsoe is a little off, which he'll be randomly off for stretches throughout a game and just not finish a layup or whatever. And just hope Pat does a lot of stuff. The more stuff Pat is doing, usually the better, unless he's hitting some threes, which hasn't happened often. He's at 31% this year, and that's gone up after a couple of good games. He was under 30 for a little while. If he's not dunking or hitting wide open threes, though, usually it's not great Pat stuff. So
all right.
I think that should be one opportunity for sure. That's a good
hashtag. Pick on Pat.
Pick on Pat. That's
there we go.
That's the one. And Ersan for sure as well. Ersan has been really rough lately. You got to hope that Ersan doesn't snap back into form, because good Ersan. I mean, when Ersan's on, then it's just so hard to beat the Bucks. Because I mean, that's the lineup you need to take advantage of, is like the Ersan minutes, because usually he'll flip for Giannis if Giannis is playing. So you got to beat Ersan. So if Ersan just starts hitting stupid shots, it just becomes like
someone will.
Yeah, it's someone will for sure.
It's like the way the Pacers defend, they're going to leave some like mediocre 3-point shooter wide open, and Ersan will score 21 points or some crap.
He was awesome in like 2 straight games filling in for Giannis after that Sixers game. So we could use that Ersan back for sure. But again, I don't know. It's going to be fascinating. This will be a fun game to watch from the Bucks' perspective to see how they use Marvin Williams and how much they use him. Everyone quietly wants him to just take all of Ersan's minutes and roll, but Bud loves Ersan, so I'm not sure we're going to see that. So I have no idea. We might see some minutes with like
Wow, is he that Ersan, much better Marv, than 4 or 5. I don't think he's that much better than Ersan.
I mean, like, he's a real NBA defender. If the charge rule was eliminated,
I was going to say, Ersan would be the best NCAA defender ever.
Ersan, like the Wisconsin Badgers head coach, must just look at Ersan like, damn, we could use
Isn't
that
there
guy.
Some little runt on Wisconsin?
Brad Davison, I think. Yeah. He's like a dirty player. I don't know. I don't watch a lot of college basketball.
Me neither. I just read an article about him specifically.
Yeah, he's like he's going after nuts and stuff. I think I'm not sure. If I was gonna watch college, I certainly wouldn't watch the Wisconsin Badgers, who play like the least modern style possible. It's abhorrent. So, but yeah, I think Ersan would fit in great on that team, but on the Bucks and the NBA against athletic guys, that's one thing too. The Pacers have a lot of athletic key forwards outside of their 2 big guys who are athletic for big guys. But like, if you get like TJ Warren on Ersan or something like that at all, like he should be able to just cook them, unless Ersan gets the charge, in which case, oh, that rule stinks, but it does work for Ersan.
It does. I haven't really gone on a ban the charge tangent on this show yet. I need to at some point.
It's just like you can keep offensive fouls, I think, like if it's very egregious, but the weird rules, like rewarding guys for going under someone, especially those ones that are just really dangerous, like get those out of here. We don't need that.
Yeah, I'm pretty anti-charge. What else, if anything, we've talked about quite a bit now. Mostly zoomed out, but that's okay. What else about this game is intriguing to you, if anything? And if not, we can wrap up here.
Well, I mean, so I don't know how much the team cares about it. My suspicion is not very much. I really want the Bucks to win 70 games this year. I think it would be an awesome milestone to hit.
Third
I
know, team obviously, ever, fourth team ever, I forget.
Third team ever, I believe. Okay. I think only the Bulls and Warriors have gotten there. I could be wrong. There might be one more, but I think only those two have. So I think so. One thing I noticed that jumped out at me when I was looking at, like, I just pulled up the Bucks game log and then sorted it by team just to see the two Pacers games quickly and look at them. So the first win, the Bucks won that game and moved on to 9-3 on the season. Rough first four games. Yeah, this thing is over. Bucks win another one. But so the next 9-3 after the first win. After the second Pacers win, the Bucks moved to 27-4. That just jumped out at me. They had one more loss and 18 more wins. Like, what a run. That's the kind of run this team has been going on. I mean, when you're now they're about to be 46-7. So as much as this game really, truly does not matter for the Milwaukee Bucks, I know somebody already in the Euro Discord has been like, well, you know, if they lose this one, it would be nice because we would love the Sixers to be in the sixth seed and have a really hard time to get to Milwaukee. So we'd love the Pacers to move up to five and be in that.
Hey, no, box. You should want to win so that your draft pick gets better, right?
Also that. Yeah, also there's that. Also, we could use a better draft pick. But yeah, so there's a lot of other reasons like that. But I want to see 70. And you can only lose, you know, five more games all year to get to 70. So my hope is even if Giannis doesn't play, I'm assuming George Hill sits out. I really want to see the Bucks pull this one out against this staggering Pacers team to move to 48-7 before the All-Star break, which is truly just obscene. I hope I'm just enjoying
that's
it.
That's how many 40, games the 40, Pacers 47, won the last 7. Two seasons. So
they would like the Bucks would have to go just about 500, I think, at this point to win 60 again. Like it's nuts. And I'm enjoying every win and not really the losses, but sort of you kind of just have to go, well, they have to lose sometimes. But so that's really what I'm gonna be looking for. Can the Bucks pull this out? I'm sure the whole team wants to go on the All-Star break. They've had a few guys dinged up and of course, Giannis probably just wants to spend time with his family right now, if he plays or not. Again, we don't know. But I want to see him pull out this win against this reeling team. But, of course, team with their back against the wall is usually pretty dangerous. So this thing has some intrigue to me for the Pacers side. I would not expect this to be easy for the Bucks.
Nothing is more important than family time. So I think it would behoove Giannis to sit out his
basketball game. That's very noble of you.
Yeah, you know, I'm just trying to be a good guy. Really stand up for the important values that the NBA needs.
Maybe he will. I certainly would not be mad at Giannis if he did make that decision. I would totally understand, but would love to see him carve up Indiana again as well.
Understood. He probably will. Ty, I did fail to mention your podcast at the beginning, so it is your time to share where people can follow you and all your stuff.
Oh, I mean, you know, I always plug myself. I probably talked about it five times by now. But you can follow me on Twitter at Ty Windisch. It's spelled weird. It's Ty with an I, TiWindisch. So the follow on Twitter, definitely I'll link everything I do 100 times. But Milwaukee Bucks / Wisconsin Herd podcast called the Euro Step, GYRO Step, Giannis's sort of signature move. That's on every podcast platform out of there. Part of the illustrious Blue Wire Network. Otherwise, I cover every NBA significant move on my Patreon, patreon.com/TyWindisch. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, other stuff here and there, but that's the main stuff. So yeah, find it all on the Twitter. Every significant move. I'm a couple behind. I need to go circle back. Like a couple, like Timothée Luwawu Cabaret got signed. I haven't written about that yet, but I don't know how interested people are. But
how will we go on?
I mean, I tweeted everybody, we all need a little TLC sometimes. I feel like that was all the analysis we really need on that, but who knows?
We need that. We need like a pun master of every NBA transaction.
That's a more interesting idea, honestly. That might be my next move.
I have an idea for a podcast I'll tell you about off air. But anyway, hopefully the Pacers can avoid 7 straight losses. It would be the most Pacers thing ever. To lose to not the Bucks 6 straight times and then beat the Bucks to end the losing streak. But you know what? We'll see. They need the All-Star break really bad. This game should be full of intrigue as the best player on the best team comes into town. Ty, thanks so much for coming on, dude.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony. This was a blast.
It always is. It always is a pleasure. Guys, go follow Ty. Again, he breaks on every move, which is hard. I don't even do that anymore. So go follow him. Of course, you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. That is all we got for today. Adam will be recapping all the action tomorrow, so we will see you then.